This is Marshall Masters for Yowza.com. That's YOWUSA.com. And today we're going to cut to the chase with Dane Wigington.
Suddenly I opened my eyes and I saw through the world's disguise. And is it a curse to know the difference between the lies and the truth? And are you afraid to let me look? Because I'll see right through you and reject of society.
Well, hey there, Yowza subscribers and listeners at large. Today we have got a powerful show with geoengineering activist Dane Wigington, and he is going to talk about things that are happening to you and your loved ones right now, and the consequences of where this is all going, and it's not very pretty. Ever since I started Yowza.com in 1999, I have interviewed and spoken with countless experts in the field and whistleblowers. And you know, they all advise the same three things. I call it the surviving the coming tribulation list. And that is, one, become self-informed. Two, get good with God. And three, join with like-minded others. Well, the first item on the list, becoming self-informed, is a no-brainer. You're doing it right now. However, when you share what you've learned with family, friends, and coworkers, what you're more likely to hear is what I call the denial mantra. It's all bullshit. It's never going to happen. And I don't want to hear about it. Well, geoengineering activist Dane Wigington is going to explain why it's not bullshit, that it is happening, and that everyone who has mocked and ridiculed you is going to hear about it from like-minded, arrogant sheeple. Then later on in the show, I'm going to cover the second two items on the tribulation survival list: getting good with God and joining with like-minded others. So, without further ado, let's get into it with Dane Wigington.
Get a job, pay your taxes, pay your dues. You can live any way that you want to as long as you don't break any of their rules.
This is Marshall, and I have the great honor and privilege of welcoming Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch to the show. Dane, man, it is just so cool you are here.
Thank you very much for having me on, Marshall. Thanks for all you're doing for the common good. We're all trying to sound the alarm in a world of insanity that we find ourselves in. And I focused on this issue of climate engineering again because of all the issues we face, mathematically speaking, short of nuclear catastrophe or cataclysm, which we may face as well, climate engineering is the greatest and most immediate threat of all. Every breath we take is laden with the materials they're spraying.
You know, I actually see the same thing. I see the natural disasters that can happen, but it's the industrial accidents and the industrial intrigues, if you will, that seem to me to be even much worse. Natural disasters come and go, but this kind of stuff is what keeps on giving in the wrong direction. And I will tell you that when I started Yowza.com in 1999, I had the help of a gentleman by the name of John Maynard, retired Army intelligence. He was at the time working the East Africa desk for the IMF. And he gave me a few rules on how to do my website. And one of the rules he gave me point blank in 1999 was, do not report on chemtrails or you will wind up in an unmarked grave. I heard that. I said, well, okay, I'm not going to fall on my sword for a topic that the public really is poo-pooing. I didn't see the point, and I moved on, and it was off topic for me. But to see someone like you pick it up and how it resonates and how it goes past that intimidation threshold, for me, is just a pure delight. And so what I'd like for you to do is just tell my listeners, what got you started down this path, Dane?
Briefly, I grew up in a very, very smoggy Southern California at 10, 11 years old, being on baseball fields where you couldn't see a quarter mile and everybody was literally choking and hacking on the smog. And I was always perplexed at why the adults weren't alarmed about that. Always wanted to get out of that environment from the time I was very young, moved to the Pacific Northwest, background in renewable energy, built a very large off-grid home. It was the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. I had a background with Bechtel Power going back a long ways. I left the company, by the way, because of the improprieties I saw. I left at a young age. But moving to the Pacific Northwest, expecting to find clean air, Marshall, and starting to lose huge amounts of my solar power uptake. Again, I'm in the middle of the wilderness. There's no industrial anything around me. The air comes off the Pacific, but these grid patterns from these aircraft were clearly not condensation, and some days blocking 70-80% of my solar uptake. I dove into research, was astounded at the mountain of data I found on geoengineering, solar radiation management, started to test my precipitation. Hoped I would not find the metals named in geoengineering patents, but I did. Aluminum, barium, strontium. The levels kept escalating, quite simply, Marshall. Clearly, this was going on in our skies, toxifying every breath I took. I was faced with a battle I did not want, but could not turn away from.
That was the awareness that you had. And awareness is like somebody slapping you in the face with a dead salmon. You just stand there spitting scales and figure out what to do next. You had that, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore moment. What happened next?
Well, when I first started this mission, if you will, all I heard was my own voice coming back at me. As you stated, you know, nobody wanted to hear or believe this, but one realizes from available data that we're all standing on the end of the plank.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else to go, nowhere to hide. And an example I've used before, but hiding in your cabin on the Titanic is not going to save you. So there was no choice but to continue marching on. And thankfully now, with people like you who are helping to give us a voice, awareness is growing extremely rapidly on this issue. And we have legal wheels turning now as well. I'm working directly with attorneys from the U.S. and Canada already. And I will make more announcements on that when I can. But we have now people entering this equation because of everybody's combined effort to reach critical mass of awareness, which we are reaching. We now have people entering the fray of their own accord. Attorneys, for example, for one, because they know they're going down on the same ship as us. And only by reaching critical mass was this sort of support possible. So it's important that people out there that think certain wheels should have turned sooner, they couldn't turn sooner. Only when people realize that this is a fight for life, people in various arenas whose help we need, only when we reach this point were these people willing to enter the fight, and now they are. So a lot of wheels are turning, but we don't have much time. We have to beat the power structure to the intersection, if you will, and they are preparing rapidly.
I'm looking at your website. You have over 17 million visitors. Man, you're on fire. You are resonating. And I am so happy to see that. Why do you think it is that so many people now are coming into this critical mass moment? What has changed with chemtrail spraying that has brought this about?
First of all, if I could, I would really suggest that everyone stick to the science terms, because the chemtrail term is not a scientific term, as many have tried to claim. They've tried to claim the Air Force used this with some primitive manual that people have produced that I do not believe is credible in any sense. So the media has used that term as the primary marginalization for this issue. Just ask Kylie Jenner how much she was fried for speaking out on this issue. I'm sure you saw that she did, for using that term. If people stick to the science terms, climate engineering, solar radiation management, geoengineering,
okay,
they cannot be marginalized so easily. So I would stick to that. The reason that the awareness is growing so rapidly is quite simply, there's not a living, walking, breathing person on the planet that has not been impacted by this. We're seeing biosphere collapse around the globe. In fact, let's look at insects. We've seen in Northern California, a 90% decline in aquatic and terrestrial insects in the last decade, as measured by a Forest Service biologist. If the insects die, we will not be far behind, and they are collapsing around the globe, as are trees, as are ecosystems, as are species, as are marine ecosystems. We are in free fall right now, Marshall, to a planet that will not sustain life. So quite simply, people are being forced to wake up.
You know, that reminds me of that often used quote about what Einstein said about the bees. When the bees disappear, that's the end of it for us. Do you see a link between the hive colony collapse that we're seeing across the country now and geoengineering?
There's no question there's a link. I've held to this for many, many years. I've tried to communicate with the head beekeeper authorities in the U.S. and been largely ignored. I've tried to communicate to them that if this was just an issue of chemicals from farms, the bees would not be just as dead 1,000 miles into the wilderness. So I have tried desperately. But these people, like many others in the environmental community especially, and I'm a staunch environmentalist in the true sense of the word, but right. environmental community, the beekeepers and so forth, a lot of these people, especially academicians who have been trained and indoctrinated, they don't want to look at harsh realities. They're trained not to look at facts, but they're trained to go on the beliefs they've been fed. So we now know, Marshall, I'm not sure if you've seen, but we now have peer-reviewed study proving that the bees have aluminum content that's astronomically high, 200 to 300 parts per billion. 3 parts per billion in the human body, in the human brain, is a problem.
Wow.
What does 200 to 300 parts per billion do in a bee? So again, we now know, peer-reviewed study, that the bees are experiencing conditions that resemble dementia and Alzheimer's. Of course they're dead. Of course they have aluminum in it. Aluminum is raining down around the globe. We have a peer-reviewed study of 1,000 whales from around the globe, also packed with aluminum, as are all of us. So again, the red flags keep going up. It's time that academia quit worrying about their paychecks and their pensions and start showing some courage instead of being cowards. We need them to step out of the shadows.
Yeah, but unfortunately, my definition of a scientist is someone who says I'm the only one that has the right to be wrong because everyone else is too stupid to think for themselves. And one of the things that is really troubling for me is the disinformation and propaganda to make people dismiss this. And the number one is, well, it's condensation trails from jets. And you mentioned to me a new video about high-pass jet engines that is just going to totally shred that disinformation nonsense. Would you do me a favor and give my listeners a forward look at what they're going to see in that video?
If we can all exercise our sense of deductive reasoning right now, we have film footage of these crimes occurring in the sky, of spray being turned on and off, up close, behind the tankers, nozzles visible, KC-10s, KC-135, C-17 Globemasters, military tankers. We also have up-close photographs, which will be on this video, of the retrofitted spray nozzles mounted on the pylons directly behind the engine exhaust on commercial aircraft. These pictures cannot be argued. We have film footage, again, of these commercial aircraft also turning on and off. And with a high-bypass turbofan engine, it's important people understand, this is simply a jet-powered fan. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So only 15% of the air that comes out of this engine is from the turbine itself. 85% is non-combusted air. So when you go higher in altitude, humidity drops off a cliff. There is almost no humidity at higher altitudes. And now let's take for the fact that 85% of the air that passes through this engine is non-combusted. Let's also take that we have, again, as I just mentioned, film footage of these trails being turned on and off. You can't turn humidity on and off. We know the same materials that are in the patents are falling to the ground in massive amounts. We have U.S. military leaders stating on the record that climate change is the greatest national security threat of all. We have Obama stating the same. Anybody who can't connect these dots and thinks that the military would ask our permission before they engage in these programs is not living in reality. Everything I've said is readily verifiable. These are not condensation trails. In fact, the high bypass is nearly incapable of making a condensation trail except under the most rare and extreme of circumstances. So people simply don't want to know, Marshall, because to know would require them to act, and people are quite simply more comfortable taking a path of denial that does not require them to take any action. And that's the path we're on. But that's not going to save them from what's coming.
I know, Dane. You know, as I often say, people cling to the bliss of their ignorance like jealous lovers. In the next segment, talk to my listeners, and I want you to give them a, if you will, a geoengineering toolkit, and to really sit down with family and friends who are going, well, gee, I don't know about all of this. and focus in on the health and environmental impacts that are of concern for every living soul on the planet, so that they can get out there and create awareness and start directing folks to your site. So hang with me.
With you all the way, Marshall. We'll cover any base you want.
If we are to survive the coming tribulation, what does getting good with God have to do with it? You know, I had to learn that lesson myself. And interestingly enough, it came on the first days of January in 2014 and 2015. And as a result of what happened to me on those days, my life has taken an entirely new path. On January 1, 2014, I had an epiphany that it was time for me to move away from Santa Cruz. I explained all that and the consequences of my move in my April 2014 article, It's Time to Bust a Move. Then, on January 1, 2015, I woke up that morning with that powerful waking vision about getting good with God, which I've described in my articles, God's Mission and Planet X, and These Weird Times. That was an amazing and powerful day for me, a day of connection with Creator and vision, and to celebrate it, I downloaded a copy of Eric Clapton's Change the World from YouTube and looped it. I just listened to it all day, and each time the lyrics were just as sweet as the first time on that day, and my fears for the future vanished. Now, I feel a love-driven sense of purpose that has changed my life in the most magnificent ways imaginable. You know, for years I've talked about the dark cloud coming, and it is. Get over it. My focus is on that silver lining. And so, to share a bit of that experience with you, here is Eric Clapton singing Change the World. As you listen to it, look beyond your fears and imagine yourself in service to Creator for a grand and noble purpose.
The stars, pull one down to you, shining on my heart, so you could see the truth. And this love I have inside is everything it seems, but for now. Bye.
I hoped you enjoyed that song and that you've been able to imagine yourself in service to Creator for a grand and noble purpose. Because you'll need that confidence as those in denial about you begin waking up in the months to come. Back in April of this year, I wrote an article titled "The Coming West Coast Exodus," and I think it's just begun. Not sure? Ask the people in Washington State about this summer. Record-breaking heat waves, drought, and an early fire season from hell. One so bad the state not only had to bring in firefighters from other states, but other countries as well. Worse yet, three valiant heroes lost their lives fighting this maelstrom. Then ask the people in California about water rationing. When their governor announced that rationing was now necessary because the state only had a one-year supply of water, most Californians were oblivious to the news, or just simply laughed it off. Well, they're not oblivious now, nor are they laughing it off. This is because they're opening their water bills and seeing the cost of water in a rationing reality. For many, the costs have tripled and in some cases quadrupled. And when the state's supply of water falls to just 6 months, people will begin taking sponge baths and flushing their toilets only once or twice a day. And this is only the beginning. And in time, what does that mean about the denial mantra? It's all bullshit. It's never going to happen. And I don't want to hear about it. Well, the mantra will no longer comfort the hubris of the sheeple. Because what will be happening to them will tell them it's not bullshit, it is happening, and what they need to hear are ideas about how to survive it. That brings us to the third and last item on the tribulation survival list, joining with like-minded others. And I'm going to talk about that at the next break and what I'm doing with an amazing group of like-minded others to survive it, and how you can join that effort. This is Marshall, and back on with one of my personal heroes, Dane Wigington. And Dane, now this is the time we got to help all of my listeners out there get up close and personal with their families who are in denial and keep telling them, you're nuts, it's crazy, nothing's going to happen, and all of that nonsense. Well, now we need to give them the tools to say, hold on a sec, you got a dog in this fight. So now, in this segment, let's talk about health and environmental impacts for all of us.
The issue of climate engineering, again, unlike any other issue, you cannot escape the ramifications from these programs. It's affecting every single breath we take. It's affecting all soils, all water, all the planet's life support systems, the entire web of life from the clouds to the ground. So again, there is no greater issue. We virtually do not have anything organic at this point because we know the bioavailable materials are being absorbed by all plant life. So again, Marshall, this is the greatest and most total assault against life on Earth ever waged by humanity. It's a battle we must win or nothing else will matter.
And it's like we became the dominant species of the planet, and the first thing we did was we go, oh, we don't have to be good stewards. We can trash it. Like as though we've got other planets to go to. The illogic of it boggles the mind. But what are we seeing in terms of how this is affecting people in terms of health and environmental impacts? What are we seeing in terms of reported health consequences for children and adults and seniors from this geoengineering, what they're spraying on us?
Again, inflammation in the body is connected to so many forms of ailments. These particulates are extremely inflammatory to the body. They're so small. We're talking about nanoparticulates. That's stated in the patents. So let's look at nanoparticulates of aluminum, for example.
Could you define nanoparticulates?
Yes, I will. If people can try to comprehend that you can fit 50,000 of these across the width of a human hair.
Wow.
So these particles are so small, they enter through the lung lining, go straight into the bloodstream where they adhere to cell receptors like a plaque. They can more easily cross the blood-brain barrier now because we have other elements in our body like fluoride. These metals are all synergistic. They're synergistic toxicity. So even though all these metals, mercury, aluminum, barium, they're all highly toxic in and of themselves, when combined, they become exponentially more toxic. In the case of aluminum and mercury, we know from study that the toxicity can increase as much as 10,000%. So we're not talking about a little bit worse. We're talking about an extremely lethal mix, Marshall.
Wow. What are the symptoms, the physical symptoms of this toxicity?
Let's look at what we have statistically. Again, I like to work on math equations so people can clearly see how cataclysmic these programs are. If we look at autism, and we know that we have a lot of things contributing to autism, certainly the vaccinations are one primary factor, but there's a bigger factor, just like we talked about with the bees. When we have this saturation of aluminum building up in the ecosystems, everything we eat, our bodies, when we've seen autism increase over 10,000% since 1975, from 1 in 5,000.
Could you repeat that?
Autism has increased statistically, actually from 1975 to 2014, 10,000%, from 1 in 5,000.
Oh my God, we're destroying a whole generation.
We are, and it gets worse. From 75 to 2014, from 1 in 5,000 in 75 to 1 in 47 in 2014. Now we have statistics from MIT. Most people recognize that research institution.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're stating on the current trajectory in 10 years, and we don't have 10 years in this course, by the way. Not the biosphere won't take 10 more years of what's going on. I doubt we have very long at all if we don't change course. But if things continued on this trajectory for 10 years, 1 in 2 children would have autism. And that certainly doesn't mean the one that's not diagnosed is healthy. Of course not. All of us, you, me, every child that lives is somewhere between healthy and a diagnosis of a neurological disease. So all of us are on that path. Some of us are stronger than others, but these metals are building up in every single life form on this planet. And life forms are resilient. The human body is resilient. But once it's reached its breaking point, that breakdown can ensue very rapidly. And I would argue all of us are nearing that breaking point.
Usually, you're going to have some kind of a harbinger sign, you know, like the sniffle before the sneeze kind of a thing. If we're approaching this and this is going to come about, are there early signs, you know, canary in the coal mine stuff?
Depends on the ailment. Again, neurologically speaking, yes, you would start, your short-term memory would start to struggle. Many people are experiencing that. I'm in direct contact with the head neurologist in Northern California who is extremely alarmed at the cognitive degeneration of his patients that were formerly mentally sound. But you have many, many other ailments directly related to these metals. I've been to Stanford, met with their top bioscientists there, and Stanford is now directly connected aluminum exposure to type 2 diabetes, to obesity, along with ALS, a host of other diseases, dementia. There's not much that you can't connect these metals. So cancers, for example, you start to disarm the immune system completely. A lot of things contributing to that as well. The lack of direct sunlight. We have 98% of the country, the U.S. population, is vitamin D deficient. All these things are combining. So it's not just a neurological problem. You might have a host of other problems like cancers that can appear very quickly. So this is an all-out assault against the human body, and you're not going to always have a harbinger depending on the type of ailment that hits you first.
Do you sometimes feel like if you took all of this together, you look at GMO, you look at what's happening with the geoengineering, processed foods, soil depletion, over-vaccination of children, all of these things together, do you sometimes sense that there's some sort of master plan to literally reduce the population?
I think it's hard to eliminate eugenics from the equation when we have the power structure discussing the eugenics issue. So we know we have studies from the Air Force, for example, from the late 90s on the lethal effects of these nanoparticulates in the air, and we know they're spraying them, then at minimum, we can say that they are not concerned about the collateral damage. But I think when we have people like David Rockefeller stating 95% of the population needs to go, it's hard to argue that eugenics is perhaps a part of the equation. We have a population that, because they're exposed to these issues, is not thinking clearly, is not thinking objectively. We know these metals have this effect cognitively. So again, all these are benefits to the power structure. It tends to more and more disable a population from being able to think its way out of the situation or even being willing to try. We have these known effects associated with these metals. So all of this would be an advantage to the power structure. It's all going on. It's all part of the equation. So we can speculate as to the overall agenda, Marshall, but the fact that these programs are real, ongoing, and we are all being exposed to this contamination, that's beyond argument. It's not theory. It's not conjecture. It's reality.
I remember all the riots and protests around Vietnam and how people took to the streets and they were angry. And today I look at this, and what's happening with geoengineering is infinitely worse than Vietnam, which was just a pure slaughter. And yet the passivity just stuns me. It's like people remind me of cattle that are just being led down the chute at the slaughterhouse. When they're doing this spraying, is there something they're adding to the mix that's not even weather-related, but more about crowd control?
Again, there are so many layers to this onion, and I would encourage people who are trying to fight the climate engineering issue to not box yourself into a corner by trying to categorize these programs as this or that. It's this, that, and many other things. So are there elements in this spray that would have these effects cognitively? Just with the testing we've done, we know these elements have such an effect. We know in the case of fluoride, with objective, assertive behavior, there's cognitive effects. We combine now the synergistic effects we talked about. The neurological impacts are inarguable, but there may be many other elements in the spray mix that we have not identified. If you don't know what you're looking for, it's hard to find. You can't just go into a lab and say, analyze this. You have to tell them what to look for. And we now know that some labs are not giving accurate results, and we can speculate as to why. In some cases, these lab owners are simply wishing to avoid becoming embroiled in this conflict. We've had tests that we know were scrubbed because we sent duplicate tests out to other labs. And we've also had labs, Marshall, raise their MDLs, their minimum detection levels, astronomically, 3,000%, which means they've raised their minimum detection levels so high that you have to have a shovelful of material in the sample for it to even show up. So in so many ways, they're trying to hide the total biosphere saturation of these toxic metals.
Wow. Of all of the labs that could be used to test this, what percentage of them are going to give you an honest result?
That's very difficult to say right now. We're struggling to find one that we do trust at this point.
Oh.
And this is not all necessarily coming down from on high. We had a lab near a Boeing plant in Southern California that the owner was aware of why the test was being done. I believe he personally did not want to be involved in this conflict, so the test was scrubbed. So there's a lot of motivation, but we have, for example, a lab in Northern California, state certified lab. I knew the former owner, who died a rather early, unexpected death, but no solid conclusion on that.
There never is.
But the new lab owner is actually telling people it's normal to have rain filled with aluminum and barium. Now, not hard to see through that. So again, we have a really interesting scenario shaping up with people who will do anything, say anything, if they think it will keep them on the inside of the circle, collecting a paycheck and a pension, and somehow a part of the herd, a part of the power structure. So very interesting times with people who have seemed to lost any sense of honor or virtue.
I agree with that. They know they're standing out on the edge of the plank along with everyone else. How is it that they can do that? I mean, what's this disconnect mechanism in their brain?
Well, I would argue the normalcy bias is very, very powerful. It's a human defense mechanism, as you know.
Yep.
And people are willing to block out just about anything if it makes them feel safer. They will ignore anything. And we know this is human behavior. Again, we can go back 2,000 years to events that were happening in Rome, for example. The population simply ignored while they went to the Colosseum every day. And you add all the metals that we have now, add the sensory overload from everything the power structure throws at us, the reality shows and smartphones and it's a very bad mix, and we're about to feel the impacts of ignoring our situation. We're about to feel it hard. And right now, I would argue the power structure is stepping up the game. What we see happening in Texas, about to happen, starting to occur right now again. The fact that Texas has been hit with record flooding is about to be hit again. There is no question, if the climate engineers did not want this to happen, they could diminish and disperse that precipitation exactly as they've done to California over and over and over again. And we're not speculating about their ability to do this. We know this is science fact. When you over aerosolize storm systems, too many condensation nuclei, the raindrops don't combine and fall as rain, but they're dispersed. And this is what they do to California, which is drought us out. We're looking at conditions here that are going to turn the state into a dust bowl, just like the polar vortex, something we hadn't heard of until the weather modification mechanism starts to create these scenarios. And as far as Texas goes, we know Texas is very resistant to the U.S. government. They're increasingly rebellious. We know Jade Helm is being set up there. And every country that's been destabilized around the globe, from the Middle Eastern countries to countries in Southeast Asia, they're hit with cataclysmic weather events to disrupt the population, to make them more dependent on the authorities prior to some sort of occupation, if you will. And people need to connect these dots. These weather events, and there's a lot of things affecting the weather. I'm not saying that the climate system is not damaged by anthropogenic activity. It is highly damaged.
Right.
But that does not negate the single biggest form of disruption of all, above everything else, which is saying a lot, because we've damaged our climate horrifically. We've damaged the planet horrifically in many forms. But these events are not occurring naturally. If they wanted to dissipate that hurricane, we have hurricane suppression patents. These will all be posted in my article later today. These events are not natural, Marshall.
I agree. I see a lot of unnatural things. And actually, in the next segment, I want to connect the dots. And then I'm going to ask you a question that has been haunting my mind about this topic for the last 2 years. So stay with me.
Should I say what I'm thinking now? Should I speak what I'm hearing about? Should I?
As is becoming obvious in this interview with Dane, the elites are doing their level best to ensure that as many of us die in the coming tribulation as is possible. And the sad truth is that the vast majority of humanity is playing right along. Consequently, they'll just wake up in time to shake their fists before they die violently. That's the coming reality of it. So the question is, are you good with that reality? I, for one, am not. This is why I formed the Dome Community Working Group. Simply put, our mission is to build what others would call land arcs for sustainable communities of 100 or more people. We have a great team and funding pledges, and this month and next, I'll be traveling the country doing regional reconnaissance for land arc sites. As I mentioned, we have a great team, but that was not always the case, not at first. When I began doing all of this a few months ago, I interviewed numerous people who were all eager to participate. While everyone was happy to talk the talk, only 1 in 5 had the commitment to walk the walk. So let me talk briefly about who I eliminated. These folks inevitably fell into one of two categories: me and mine slackers and retired dabblers. The me and mine slackers were all delighted by the concept of service to others, but in the final analysis, they just came for one thing: information they could use for their own me and mine preparation and planning, and then they'd disappear. The slackers reminded me of an old Russian proverb, Grechi govno stinyet bistra, which means hot shit cools fast. Then there were the retired dabblers, as I call them. The slackers I expected, but the retired dabblers was a huge disappointment. Going in, I looked for their wisdom and commitment, but what I learned is that when you no longer have to pay a mortgage, meet a deadline, raise kids, and so forth, you're not interested in project deadlines. As the old saying goes, idle hands are the devil's workshop. And so these retired dabblers would socialize, fantasize, and demonize. Then on the other hand, there are those 1 in 5 I call doers, and I do love them so. And if you're wondering what makes them different from the slackers and the dabblers, I can sum it up in two words: patience and fortitude. Doers have it. Slackers and dabblers don't. That's why our application process is designed to filter out time-wasting slackers and dabblers. Those of you who are doers and want to join with like-minded others on a noble mission, ask yourself, are you ready to walk the walk? As you listen to Patience and Fortitude, recorded in 1946 by the Andrews Sisters.
Patience and fortitude. Patience and fortitude. And things will come your way.
Patience and fortitude. Patience and fortitude. Patience and fortitude. And things will come your way. When you have solitude, can make life dull and crude. Patience and fortitude. And things will come your way. Couldn't wait for the egg to hatch. To burn both ends of the match. Couldn't wait for the cake to bake, but now I can see it's a big mistake. Patience and fortitude. Spoil the strongest lock with patient fortitude. Grindstone wears away the night with patient fortitude. Same applies to nagging wife with patient fortitude.
Snow
with patient fortitude.
You'd be warm where sinners go
with patient fortitude. Patience and fortitude. Patience and fortitude. Patience and fortitude. And things will come your way.
And things will come your way.
For those of you who are doers and who want to make an informed decision about joining our efforts, click on the relocation webinar link at the top of the page at yowza.com. Then, on the relocation webinar with Marshall Masters page, you will see a link to the community application process. Click on that and make an informed decision. With that, let's get back to Dane, as he answers a big question that's been on my mind for quite some time.
Oh, give me something to hold on to as I venture into the great beyond. And if you gotta say anything at all, let it be something true and beautiful.
This is Marshall back on with Dane, and now, Dane, I want to ask you a question about all of this that's been haunting me for 2 years, and I have really tried to find an answer to it. Can't find an answer, and you are the go-to guy. And I'll preface it with this. For the last couple of years, I have people reporting to me on the West Coast, and I'm talking as far north as British Columbia. People in British Columbia telling me that in the dead of winter, when they're supposed to have 4 to 6 feet of snow, they're just having occasional rains, shallow wells are going dry, and their salmon runs are down 75%. But what was more impacting for me was last February, when the governor of California announced there would be water rationing. And then, you know, all of the things that you report in your many excellent videos. And here's the question. What they're doing on one hand, yeah, I mean, it really seems like they're doing their level best, all things put together, to reduce the population of the planet. But I'm wondering if there isn't a larger goal, one that is more to their needs, because, you know, they're on the edge of the plank just as we are. And my question to you is it possible that the transcendent motivation for all of this is that the elites are trying to trigger us into a mini ice age?
They certainly have tried to exercise the climate engineering mechanism for a very long time. On that note, Marshall, if I could have just one moment for a quick monologue.
Go with it.
In the late 40s, when these climate engineering programs were implemented on a significant scale, we saw a formerly linear warming. The planet was in the elliptical phase of its orbit, entering into the Industrial Revolution around 1850. Instead of cooling, it began warming, and that stayed very linear until the late 40s, when these programs were first heavily implemented over the poles. We know they were spraying over the poles. We have science study to prove the aluminum that was showing up there. That's one of those studies from Stanford. So we saw then at the late 40s, a very unexplainable, anomalous leveling off of the warming, because initially the climate engineering is much more effective. The aerosolization of the atmosphere is much more effective because the negative aspects have not yet come into play. So by the time we hit the early 70s, Marshall, you might remember some of the climate science community, about 20%, stated, we don't know what's happening. We don't understand why it's cooling. Maybe we're entering an ice age. They didn't know because they didn't know climate engineering was going on. But then the negative aspects begin to kick in. Ozone depletion, disruption of the hydrological cycle. We have a massive UV hitting us now because we have massive northern and southern hemisphere ozone holes, directly related to climate engineering, by the way, not the CFCs, which have been blamed for this. So now we have the warming continue. And by 98, which is the warmest year recorded prior to 2014, now we have the geoengineers doubling down again. Even though the programs are creating huge, huge negative effects, the only thing they know how to do is do more. And that's what they did. That's when the term climate change was most heavily implemented, because they knew they were going to be causing radical fluctuations up and down. So the programs were heavily ramped up again in 98, and then again in 05, 06, 08, 09. So the planet is not just warming at this point, it's in total meltdown. And those who don't believe this, who live in the eastern half of the U.S. lower 48, should consider the world is bigger than your immediate horizon. The eastern half of the U.S. 48, lower 48, is less than 1%. It's about 0.5% of the globe's surface area. That's not the whole world. They have intentionally and repeatedly engineered cool downs in the eastern half of the lower 48 to completely taint perception, to make headlines, to focus on the Boston record snow over and over, while we have, as you correctly cited, Marshall, we have 0% of normal snow in the Sierras, 0%. Nobody's covering that. We have Siberia burning to the ground. We have South America burning to the ground. I encourage people to look at the bigger picture, because what is happening is this. The planet is in total meltdown, and climate engineering is helping to fuel that fire. It's making it exponentially worse. Their short-term cool downs come at the cost of a much worsened overall warming. There is so much momentum behind the current warming of the planet that we are in totally uncharted territory, and every single day the climate engineering goes on makes that situation worse, not better. It's not the only cause. I'm not saying that. 100 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a day is a problem. Cutting down the forest is a problem. Paving the planet is a problem. Climate engineering is bigger than all those problems put together, if that's possible. And mathematically, that's what the figures state. So that's where we're at. This will be evident to people as the weeks and months go by. We're seeing records shattered everywhere. And Marshall, and I'll leave with this, we're seeing an underreporting of daytime high temperatures. A friend of mine with the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Yes, we're seeing that too. It's like liar, liar, pants on fire.
So you've noted that as well.
Oh gosh, yeah. To me, the Weather Channel has become a sinister organization.
They are. Who owns the Weather Channel? Bain Capital, Blackstone, the very corporate powers that we know are behind a lot of other things. Who owns Weather Central? Rothschilds. Who owns Climate Corporation? Monsanto purchased for $970 million. We know the foxes are running the hen house. They're running the flow of information from top to bottom. The same people engineering the climate are controlling the dissemination of the weather forecast, which is really the scheduled weather.
Yeah. And people just go, well, it must be so. And they don't question it. And one question I have for you. What I'm noticing with the movement of the jet stream, is this to push the water from the west to the east for the benefit of large agribusiness and all their monocrops in the Midwest?
Again, multi-layers to that question. One, we see what they're doing right now. This massive flow of moisture coming up through the center of the U.S. allows them to cool the center part of the U.S., but that moisture, they continue to pump north. They need moisture to chemically ice nucleate. They are ice nucleating most moisture that they can. That cools down the cloud bank, cools the layer of air underneath, which descends to the ground and creates some lower temperatures to create the illusion of a cooler planet. But that moisture is also being pumped toward the Arctic, where it's being ice nucleated to try to slow down the imploding Arctic ice pack. I encourage people to investigate everything I'm saying. Arctic ice is at record low, not expanding as people have been told. Antarctic sea ice is expanding to a degree. Why? Because there's so much fresh water pouring into the oceans off the land-based Antarctic ice. It's desalinating the oceans, and that fresh water freezes at 4 degrees higher temperature. Many more layers to the equation. So when we look at the baking of the West, the jet stream, as you mentioned, and their manipulation of it, the West, as in California, should be looked at as a climate sacrifice zone, because they have to fry the West in order to push the jet stream through Alaska and then back down south to pick up the moisture from the Gulf, cools the East. So California can be seen as a climate sacrifice zone and as a target, because even moisture that comes in from the East, the monsoonal moisture over California, they spray away, they aerosolize and disperse. So they are stopping the rain in California at all costs from any direction. They're taking water rights. They're stripping land from private owners. So much going on, Marshall. So many layers to the onion.
Let's look at California, because I mean, I recently posted an article titled The Coming West Coast Exodus. And right now, the state of California has officially a 1-year supply of water. When that hits 6 months, that's when things are going to get spooky. What do you think the chances are of that happening within the next year?
I'll say this, they can shut the moisture off, and I have said this for many years. It's on my presentations going back a number of years. So again, they can keep the moisture shut off as long as they want. They have the noose around our necks. Not only are we breathing what they're spraying, they can shut the spigot off, and they continue to. I was in Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom's office at the Capitol. In his private office with his top aides, I presented data, satellite imagery that they could not and did not argue with. They know this is going on. I know other people at the Capitol. I've had high-level EPA meetings, spoken in front of CARB, California Energy Commission. I was told 6 weeks ago by congressional aides, I'm quoting, we all know this is going on. We don't know what to do. Why don't they do anything? Back to the flow of money. Because California is being kept afloat. State agencies are being kept afloat by the central bank printed money machine. It's keeping the whole system afloat. It's how they control agencies. It's how they silence anybody, everybody. While the whole ship goes down, everybody pretends not to know when they all know. But we're reaching a point where people, I hope, Marshall, realize that their silence won't save them. We all must stand out of the shadows now, or we won't have tomorrow.
If California were its own country, it would be the 13th wealthiest country in the world. Why destroy such a financial juggernaut?
One has to consider the paradigm we have known of industrialized society was doomed from the beginning. It cannot and will not be sustained. And that ship is going down, period. That reality is changing, period. The power structure along with Bill Gates and others, has built the Doomsday Seed Vault in the Arctic. For those who don't know about this, please look it up. It's not speculation.
Yes.
So we have Doomsday Seed Vault. We have methane spewing from the Arctic. And this goes back to your earlier question, Marshall. Did the power structure believe they could manipulate the planet and cool things down? Yes, I believe that they, in their arrogance and insanity, thought they could. They were wrong. And now they're realizing how wrong they were. So methane is filling the atmosphere right now. Can't be hidden much longer. The ship is going down. In regard to whatever they do to any given state, the agriculture produced in that state, in the bigger picture, especially from their point of view, it does not matter. They know that industrialized civilization is collapsing as we speak. Anarchy is ensuing in 36 countries around the globe as we speak. This paradigm is disintegrating by the day, and they know it. And right now, they're simply trying to maneuver their chess pieces into position to prepare to go underground and try to ride this out, which is a mathematical impossibility because of the cataclysm and the scope, scale, and time frames we're talking about. So right now, the power structure, I believe, is in a panic. That's in our favor. The single greatest leap we could take in the right direction is to expose and stop the climate engineering so the planet can respond on its own to the damage already done.
Last question. If we could stop it tomorrow, how would Gaia heal herself?
The hydrological cycle would be furious. The planet has been trying to cool itself, but they are, again, suppressing cyclonic rotation, especially in the Atlantic Basin. So we're heading to what's called a Canfield Ocean, a stratified ocean, stratified atmosphere. The hydrological cycle will be furious. Coastal habitation is going to be decimated. There's probably mathematically the best figures we have, 70 to 80 feet of sea level rise guaranteed at this point over the coming years and perhaps decade or more, two, three, four. Again, that's stretching out quite a ways, but there are certain levels of inertia that are built in and guaranteed. But if the planet could respond and rain would fall again over the boreal forests, which right now are dying by the day, instead of being carbon sinks, they're carbon sources. We have to allow the planet to respond on its own, regardless of the consequences. You have to allow the ozone layer to replenish itself, which right now it's being completely torn apart by climate engineering. If Gaia, if the planet is not allowed to respond, mathematically speaking, on this trajectory, we have no chance for even short-term survival of not just the human race, but of the planet. We are on track for Venus syndrome on this course. We must change direction.
My God, you are talking about this is an ELE, an extinction level event.
We are in mathematically the sixth great extinction right now. We're losing 200 to 300 species of plant and animal a day. Please, for your listeners, verify these figures. No, this is science fact.
Wow. This has been a stunning interview, Dane, and you're a hero. I love your work. I love your science. I love your passion, that the way you go at it, man. Just go, man, go.
I appreciate your support, Marshall, but I'm only a father doing what any father should do. I'm only trying to do what any decent human being would do, what you're trying to do. We're all in this together. We're all spokes in the wheel. We all matter in this fight. So again, if we stand together, we have a chance. But everybody must get off the bench, get in the game, educate yourself, share credible data with others. We all have a part to play in this unfolding cataclysm. But if we all hold together, we can tilt the scale. But we must do it now. We don't have tomorrow.
That's right, because I'm standing out on the edge of that plank with you, and I hear it creaking.
It is.
Dane, thank you, sir. Fabulous interview.
Thank you, Marshall.
Folks, I know that if you're listening to this program, you're all over the first item on the Surviving the Coming Tribulation list, like white on rice, that being becoming self-informed. But what about the other two items? Getting good with God and joining with like-minded others. Are you a little shaky there because you really do not know what those last two items truly look like? If so, I suggest you visit Dane Wigington's website at geoengineeringwatch.org. When you read his articles and watch his videos, you'll see a man who truly is good with God and is joining with millions of like-minded others. So if you need an inspiring example, that's where you go. And I'll leave it on that note. So until the next time we meet, remember Marshall's motto. Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope. This is Marshall, and I'll catch you on the backside.